Here's Charlie with his perspective on the current state of State House journalism. Charlie Wheeler.
Thank you. And I told Randy I wouldn't take more than 3 hours. When I was asked to talk about the status of State House reporting, one word popped into my mind: crisis. And it's been on a downward trek for some time. It's kind of on life support, but there is a bright spot, which I'll get to in a moment. Journalism in general, newspapers in particular, have fallen on hard times. That's no big surprise. The Financial Times, when did this come out? The 19th of February, talked about what they referred to as ghost newspapers. They pointed out that more than 1,800 U.S. newspapers, some of them century-old titles that had survived the Depression, have closed over the past 15 years. Many of those that are left are shelves of what they used to be, so-called, quote, ghost newspapers. And I found this interesting, too. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the newspaper industry in the U.S. lost more jobs than coal mining did. There were 174,000 people in newspapers in 2016, compared to 412,000 in 2001. And we all are familiar with that. We've all seen our shops been reduced. We've all seen papers that used to publish 7 days a week now do 6 or 5. We've seen the consolidations. Now, part of it is in response to the dawn of the internet age, so to speak, not being able to adjust our business model to take into account the fact that now people aren't putting classified ads in, they're going to Craigslist or eBay, those kinds of changes. And part of it also is the advent of social media, where unfortunately people are more inclined to believe some, I'm trying to think of a, what would you say, polite word here, some junk they see on Facebook than they are some report in a legitimate news organization. And part of it is, I believe, a change in ownership. Back when I started as a reporter, I was a sophomore in high school, so I'll give you an idea how long ago it was. I started covering sports for the Joliet Herald News. It was a family-owned operation. Tribune was family-owned. A lot of the newspapers here in Illinois were family-owned. That model is pretty much gone everywhere. They've become more... Well, they went through a phase when they were public ownership, and now they're owned by, a lot of them are owned, the big media companies are owned by private equity investors, for whom putting out a newspaper is no more different than making dog food or soap flakes. They have no sense of community. It's all about the bottom line. And there's a big discussion going on. Should we, as a investor in a newspaper, should we really care about the community? Or is it all about the bottom line, our fiduciary responsibility to our stockholders to maximize profits, come in and hollow out the paper, sell off the assets, then move on? Sort of like running a chop shop. And that's kind of what we're competing against. Now, if you look at me, in my case, I've gone through all of this. I was hired in April of 1969 by the Chicago Sun-Times, by Rachel Otwell's grandpa. Let's hear it for Ralph Otwell. And pretty soon, I was interested in state government and politics. I covered the Illinois Constitutional Convention. And after the convention was over, they needed somebody to come down and cover the legislative session in 1971. I was the only guy in the city room who'd been to Springfield before and was willing to go back. Because it was like Springfield, that's a cow town. They roll up the sidewalks where the sun goes down. here, Chicago, Wine, Women, and Song, you know, all of that stuff. And it was like, yeah, but I really like covering this stuff. So I've been here ever since. But when I started, there were five daily newspapers in Chicago, all of whom had a bureau here in Springfield. There were two St. Louis papers that had a bureau here in Springfield, two wire services with a bureau. The network affiliates here in Central Illinois had a bureau. There were a couple of radio networks, plus local radio stations had bureaus. That has all changed. And even WGN-TV had a bureau, full-time guy down here in the state capitol. That has all changed. And some of it occurred kind of inevitably. For example, the St. Louis Globe Democrat is no more. The Chicago Daily News is no more. Chicago's American, in its final incarnation, Chicago's Today, is no more. The bureaus, 20 years ago, there were 23 full-time bureaus in the State House, 17 print, 6 broadcast. They employed 33 full-time reporters covering state government. On session days, another 8 people would come down. Quincy would send somebody, Waukegan News Sun would send somebody. That has all changed. The papers that have lost their bureaus, this is kind of alphabetical order, Alton, Belleville, Bloomington, Champaign-Urbana, Danville, Peoria, Rockford. UPI has gone, as I said. The small newspaper group, which had a bureau, and for the Kankakee paper, papers along the Illinois Valley, papers in the Quad Cities, they're gone. Lee Enterprises would serve Carbondale, Decatur, the Quad Cities, Charleston, Mattoon, Times of Northwest, one of the papers up in Munster. I don't remember which one. I know it's not your paper, but yeah. Yeah, they're gone. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch no longer has anybody. Daily Herald no longer has anybody. My alma mater no longer has anybody. The Copley operation, which was family owned, has been bought by Gatehouse. Once upon a time, they employed 5. Now they have one guy, Doug Finke. A lot of you would remember Doug, because he's been around for a while. But the change in attitude, right at the turn of the century, there was a national recession. And some of these publicly owned companies were worried about profit margins. So they were laying people off, cutting staffs. Why do we need 6 reporters? We could do it with 4. Maybe hire a stringer. The then head of the Copley family, David Copley, came to Springfield and he talked to the State Journal Register. And the guy who was managing editor then, Robert Pope, recounted the story to me. David got up and said, "Don't worry about it. We're not going to lay anybody off. We're not going to hurt our product. We'll settle for maybe 11, 12% profit. Because we see the newspaper as a community service." And that's kind of the attitude that, in my mind, has sort of disappeared. Even the Associated Press, once upon a time, they had 3 full-time reporters and a photographer. Now they have John O'Connor trying to do the work of all of them. And he does a good job. And so it's just general overall diminution of people watching government. Right now, there are 3 print bureaus with 3 full-time people in them and a new bureau, which I'll get to in a minute. Some people come down for the session. There are some online services like the Daily Line. I wish Politico would have an online service here. Yeah. And the local TV, the network affiliates still have people who cover state government. WTTW in Chicago sometimes will send down a reporter to cover state government. And at the same time, the pace has just increased tremendously. I don't think I could make it as a reporter nowadays. I was somebody who always would read the bills. I was somebody who didn't dash off immediately what happened. I tried to understand it. I tried to talk to other people. I'd say, does this really do what I think it does? And they'd say, no, you got it all wrong. Or they'd say, yeah. And so there was the ability to do that. And it wasn't just me. Everybody else in my generation in the press corps could do that. You'd come out with a good story. You didn't have to tweet something instantaneously. Now, the danger in the instant tweets, how many of you remember Denny Hastert? Yeah. I met Denny when he was a rookie lawmaker from Yorkville in the House. And I thought a lot of him because he took up an issue that was very difficult, electric utility deregulation. He did a magnificent job on it. But he was sentenced for bank fraud having to do with payoffs that he made because of, basically he was abusing some of his wrestling team members back at Yorkville High. So the judge, Thomas Durkin, and this was a couple years ago, began by explaining, well, the defendant is going to have to be on probation. So right away, the tweets go out, probation, probation, no jail time. He's going to be in probation. He doesn't go to jail. And then Durkin, after talking about probation, says, oh, by the way, you're also going to serve 15 months. So the people who tweeted it immediately got it wrong. Unfortunately, there was one station that shall remain nameless in Chicago that ran the no jail time for Durkin. They ran it for like an hour before they made the correction. Or there was the instance of when the House passed legislation legalizing gay marriage, the tweets went up. There were three tweets that had different roll call counts for the yeses and noes on the bill. Now that's the kind of stuff in my day would not happen because you actually had a chance to think about it before you sent something off. The volume of information is much greater than it ever was, too. The things that you have access to. If we wanted to do, sitting here right tonight, we could look up any bill of the six, what is it, probably 7,000 by now that have been introduced, the amendments, and see the full text on the screen. You could see the reports from the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, all of their financial data from the last 20-some years, all online. In my day, you had to try and get hard copies of stuff. And after 5 o'clock, good luck. And now it's all there. What that means is there's more for you as a reporter to try and stay on top of. And all the reports that agencies put out that are just kind of sitting out there. And there was a story by Anna Espinoza, who's a local TV reporter. This ran on April 2nd, and she looked at the Inspector General reports from the Department of Children and Family Services after a death of not the most recent fatality, but the one before that. And she found out that there were 35 employees who falsified reports over the time period that she looked at. And this is open information. Anybody could have FOIA'd those records and got them. She did. Nobody else did. In my day, those would have been followed religiously. I spent a lot of time looking at stuff that turned out to be useless. But you still do it because you never know when you're going to find that nugget that makes a story. So there's more there. And in terms of what state government is being asked to do, they get more things dumped on them. You look at the federal government, how they're moving, particularly under the current administration, for deregulation, leaving a lot of stuff up to the states, areas like education or the environment. There's a plant in Willowbrook called Sterigenics, and the US EPA was kind of, there was a problem with a chemical called ethylene oxide, which is highly carcinogenic, and it was being vented to the open air. The EPA knew about it, and they just kind of let them go along. The Illinois EPA knew about it, kind of let him go along. Michael Hawthorne, who is the first of your class to be in the Hall of Fame, and who also had the let me say, I had the good fortune of having Michael as my intern at the Sun-Times. He did a story on what was going on, and that caused action. It caused the Pritzker administration to effectively shut down the plant so this carcinogenic material was no longer wafting out over how many square miles, how many schools? Yeah. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing that had you not got all of those EPA reports that it was the Center of Disease Control. Yeah. That. Yeah, who know where to look and how to go about it. Yeah. And in the meantime, there have been other entities that try and fill this void. Some of them are the political staffs at the legislative caucuses. I don't think John Patterson is here tonight, but his Senate Democratic, is he? No, I don't see him. His communication staff sends out a ton of news releases. Somehow or other, I'm on their mailing list. I also get the news summary, which is a collection, an aggregation of stories about state government that have been published throughout Illinois, some on over the air, some online, some in print. And I will see regularly in there, I will see stories that will have a byline. It'll say community correspondent. And it'll be the exact same press release that I got from the same source. And I'm thinking, what the heck? And that's, in a sense, it's kind of benign. There's a spin, but there is some accuracy to it. You also have the situation where some people will run the local lawmakers' report to the community as a news story. And that's also spun. That there are other examples where the facts are just flat out wrong, or where they are selectively chosen. The example I use is one of the pseudo papers put out by Dan Proft. And this is a story talking about fines being levied on political action committees, which did not disclose fully what their expenditures were. So this is Local Labs News Service appeared in North Cook News, which is one of these, I say, phony newspapers. But the lead says, the campaign committee Illinois Education Association, Local 512, owes a $2,000 fine imposed according to the State Board of Elections. You think, oh, wow. A detailed look reveals the committee owes additional outstanding fines totaling $400. Oh, this is horrible. Then the last paragraph, says, State Board records dating back to 2003 show 31 area campaign committees owe a combined total of $233,000 in pending fines. So I'm thinking to myself, So there were 33, they owe 233 divided by 33. The average is 7,500. So they highlight one that's for 2,000 because it's a union. And so you get that kind of reporting. And that is not good for our society. Now, I said there was a bright spot. The bright spot is Capital News Illinois, which is a news bureau supported by the Illinois Press Foundation and the McCormick Foundation, whose job it is to provide content to all the state's newspapers. And I have to confess, I kind of have a conflict of interest. I'm on the board of directors of the Press Foundation. I was one of the people who helped get this thing going and who pushed for it because I saw a need to give in-depth stories. And they are used, they're picked up all over the state. They did a run-up after the first couple months. 273 newspapers ran their stuff, roughly 3,200 stories, more than 600 on page one, total circulation of 1.5 million. And the stories that they do are so in-depth and structured so that if you just want the first three paragraphs, you know what the story is about. If you want to get into the real nitty-gritty, it's there. And they've had, well, where is Becca? Becca Ansel is one of the reporters. She has had more stories in the Sun-Times. She has had more bylines in the Sun-Times than the reporter that the Sun-Times sends down now again to cover Springfield. And that's in 2 months. They also have an interim bureau chief, three reporters, and an intern. They have the biggest staff of anybody in the State House Press Corps. And it's 2 months old. And so that's kind of where I think the hope is, that these kinds of consortia, which provide copy that is used by the editors of the newspapers that used to have their own person there. And in the future, I know our board is thinking about trying to bring in a video element, try and work something out with Illinois broadcasters so that we have content available for television news stations as well and online, but that's still in the future. So you might say to yourself, well, what difference does it make? The difference is, now I'm going to get into my preachy mode here. Think back to when this nation was founded. It was a pretty radical notion that average people could govern themselves. You don't need a king. You don't need an emperor. You don't need some shaman. You don't need God providing his wisdom to somebody who will tell you what to do. People can do it for themselves. Now, they didn't get it right, obviously, because their idea of people is old white guys like me, right? They left out women altogether, left out people of color altogether. But still, it was a radical notion that you could have self-governance. What makes it work was people need to be informed. To be informed, you need a free press. Back then, it was press. Al Gore hadn't invented the internet yet. And so... And so they saw the media as a way of informing the citizenry, to let them know what the issues were, to let them know who the people were and what they stood for, who wanted to be their leaders, to watch over the operation of government as a watchdog, to call out things that aren't right, like Mike did with Sterigenics, and to make sure that the system would work, they created the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law, right? Freedom of the press. And so that's why it's important. And that's why, to piggyback on what was said earlier about what Patty was saying about the importance of our job, and forgive me, Chancellor, I've been at the university 26 years. I still see myself as a reporter. I'm third generation. Some of you may have remembered in the press room the picture of the 1907 press corps with my grandfather from the Chicago Inner Ocean. So I've been around a long time. For the first 50 plus years of my life, the Chicago Sun-Times fed me, clothed me, housed me, because my dad worked at the Sun-Times. So I'm a firm believer in this, how important it is. And I still see myself as a reporter. And I am very pleased with this program. I like to think that I didn't really screw it up too badly. And I look at you folks who are going to be carrying on this legacy, particularly you guys who are in the class now. You're good, and I see it here in the next row, a couple of guys from last year, right? Brennan and Sam and Beck. You're going to carry this forward, and it's going to be on your shoulders that the responsibility will fall to continue to provide the information that people need to be able to govern themselves. So thank you very much for being here. Let's have another round of applause for our stars.